Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that?
Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents.
Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
We've got another guest on here who I'm hoping is going to bring a really twisted perspective to this, but I could be wrong. So Danilo, no, it's cool. So Danilo, who just joined in, should I do like a fast, rapid intro of all the people that are here, and then I'll say who you are.
Sure.
So below me is Neil Karkanis, who is a student at South Jersey Sudbury School, who actually that's kind of close to you. And he and I have kind of organized this net neutrality thing because we care about this issue and we're passionate and trying to raise awareness and figure out what to do about it. To my side, over on this side, is Adam Zhang that I went to college with, and he also is a YouTube content creator and far more political savvy than I am about these issues, and so it's nice to have him here. Nick, on this side, is an activist in the cannabis world for reducing the stigma surrounding cannabis.
I can see where they are in relation to you. Is it the guy with the drapes in the background you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So Nick, sorry about that.
Yeah.
And Nick runs an online store selling apparel related to this cannabis stigma removal movement. And then Nick, ooh. Neil, the other Nick, who's down there with the baby, that's the only one in the screen with the baby. Nick's an organizer in San Diego who has built a local community revolving around mindfulness and Buddhism practitioner. He started the Wake Up House. And also is involved in Represent Us, which is the San Diego chapter of a national movement to take money out of politics. Now, Danilo comes in, who, as I know Danilo, he's a parent of an unschooler, right? Is sort of how we connected in some way. Or you're involved in unschooling, and you've done stand-up comedy, and that's how we first connected, was when I was trying to find comedians that were involved in unschooling to do a tour. And then I found out Danilo runs a YouTube show channel and a podcast called Peaceful Anarchism. So what is interesting to me is the idea of here we are sitting here frustrated about this law that's being repealed saying that net neutrality is going to be taken away. We're all stressed and we're anxious and we're upset about it. And there's a piece of me that like is very anarchistic. I don't like the idea of rules. I don't like the idea of structure. I don't like the idea of being forced to do good things. Yet I'm sitting here and I'm saying, Jesus, it'd be really nice if we had fucking net neutrality laws to prevent corporations from doing shitty things. So I'm very curious to see what the peaceful anarchist thinks about net neutrality.
Ooh, wow. Well, good evening, gentlemen. It's great to be here. I was just listening for the past 15 minutes. And it seems I'm alone.
No. I want the alternative perspective. I want
to give as much background as I can.
I want you to persuade me, dude. I want to be
wait. No, it's okay. No, I just want to say that what I say, it's hard to understand if I don't describe like what anarchism is, where I come from. Like if I just say I oppose net neutrality, it's like, you know, that brings up all kind of barriers, emotional responses. But for me, okay, really quick, I'm just get covered the basics of why I am an anarchist, or also called a voluntarist. So anarchist is basically someone who believes that no ruler is legitimate, right? There should be no ruling class, or i.e. no state, right? And then a voluntarist is somebody who supports voluntarism or voluntary interactions between consenting individuals, right? And the utmost representation of coercion or the threat of violence is the state, right? Because nothing that the state does is voluntary. We must pay our taxes. We must obey the law. There is no question when a police officer is behind you. He's not asking you to pull over. He's requiring you to pull over. So everything about the state is coercion, is a threat of violence, is basically a gun. Another way to say a law is an opinion with a gun, right? And so again, there's a common voluntarist maxim, which is taxation is theft, right? Because if it was voluntary, they wouldn't be demanded at the point of a gun, right? So given that backdrop of why I'm an anarchist, basic rundown, so net neutrality is an interesting topic. Now, I understand what you guys are saying. I think I understand what you guys are saying in that, you know, the internet is it's a wonderful resource. We can access all this information. And, you know, I have my content creation and as some of you guys as well. And a lot of people do their activism through the internet. And it's a really wonderful thing. So as far as I understand, net neutrality is that they want to make it like a utility, right? Like water, like electricity. So in essence, it seems...
Next step.
Say again?
That would be a next step, but yes.
Okay. Yeah, so in essence, what they want to do, it seems to me, is they want to nationalize these companies and put them under complete state control, right? And another thing I should mention is, you know, one of the common fallacies of people when they interact with anarchists is they think, oh, you're just an apologist for the big corporations, right? Like you love Monsanto, you love Chase, you love Bank of America. No, of course not. But we also recognize that these large mega corporations, including AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast, all these huge ISP companies, if you look in the history, especially AT&T, which has been around like almost 100 years, AT&T was basically started as a government monopoly, right? So one of the interesting things that we're all taught in our government schooling, in our government history classes, is that if it wasn't for antitrust laws, right, there would be monopolies left and right. People, companies would be, you know, conglomerating and getting enormous and, you know, killing off competition, you know, decreasing the price to kill off competition and then raising them, shafting the consumer, right? And we all suffer, right? But in reality, what actually ends up, the only reason that these companies are able to achieve such monstrous proportions is because they have the protection, the legal immunity by the state, conferred by the state, right? It's called sovereign immunity, and then they also control the politicians, in effect bribing the politicians, or it's called regulatory capture, right? So you know, people clamor. Let's say the Occupy Wall Street people, right? You know, the whole crisis happened. What was it? Was it after 2008 that they started? I think so, right? Around
yeah,
there?
Yeah,
that's
around the financial
crisis. Okay, so right after that, people, you know, the whole Occupy Wall Street, people protesting Wall Street, when in effect, the only reason that these financial institutions are so powerful is because they are so connected and so protected by the state. So in essence, these corporations would not exist to the extent and to the power that they do exist without the legal immunity and legal protection of the state. So basically all that needs to happen for these corporations to break up and to weaken is basically to subject them to competition that every single private business that does not have political clout, that cannot buy a politician, subject them to that competition, and they will automatically shrink. There is absolutely no way that a corporation can maintain its monstrous proportions. Now when we're talking about net neutrality, see the common fear, I think, is, you know, if we don't regulate these companies, they will again grow to monstrous proportions and just you know, censor left and right and things like that. But so basically what I'm saying is that if we do regulate, not only will it not work to regulate these companies, it will actually be counterproductive, right? Because through the method of regulatory capture, they will easily either buy and bribe politicians to pass regulations that are beneficial to them, or they will provide their own people to staff the agencies that are meant to regulate them, right? And in effect, write the regulation that is supposed to regulate themselves. What ends up happening is that not only does it not work and it not weaken them or restrain them, but it actually stifles competition, right? Because these enormous corporations do have the deep pockets to comply with their own regulations. However, the small startup companies, which if they were allowed to compete with these large firms, if they were allowed to keep compete in the marketplace, which again, they are prevented through many legal barriers, through many regulatory barriers, if they were allowed to compete, that alone would weaken and diminish their power and influence. All right, go ahead.
Ready? Do you have something to add? You want to ask them?
Well, it seems like we agree on the problem at hand, but where we differ is on this issue.
Yeah.
I mean, we agree that these corporations have too much influence on the government.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you know, money buying you power, power buying you more money. But if we remove this regulatory framework, I think that is really where the big issue comes at hand, because these national monopolies will develop. I guess I'm going to disagree with you there, that a monopoly can only exist because of government's regulation. I think it's going to exist with or without that regulation. So we need to at least try to curtail and reduce that power in some way. When you look at the monopoly that the telecoms already have today, we would be giving them more power if net neutrality were to be abolished.
Well, I really can't see that happening, only because if really there was no regulation, like for example in let's say in electronics, like in cell phones and computers, in laptops, very little regulation, right? And what is the result, right? High efficiency, very fast innovation, monumental innovation, and low prices. That to me is the direct result of a non-regulated, virtually free market. We don't really have a 100% free market, but a virtually free market. But what you do have in markets that are immensely regulated and heavily taxed is you have a stifling of innovation, and basically it freezes. It freezes in time. Innovation is destroyed. I mean, look at public schools, right? 100 years ago, how do they teach kids? Desk, chair, chalkboard. How do they teach kids today? Desk, chair, chalkboard. There is absolutely no innovation. No innovation when the government takes control or nationalizes anything. Look at the post office. Post office functions basically right now at like a $17 billion deficit, right? They're in debt. Now, if that was a private company, no private company could stay in business $17 billion, right? So they either have to innovate, improve their product, or go out of business, and at which point another company would come in, take its place, and improve upon the failures of the previous company, right?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask. So if you're opposed to net neutrality, right, because it can open the door to all its innovation, how will that improve the situation with telecoms if net neutrality is repealed? Because in that case, these companies still have power that you're talking about. They'll still have sway over the governments, and now they'll have even more control of what we can see. So how can a repeal of net neutrality be beneficial in that situation?
Well, that's exactly why I'm not just opposed to net neutrality. That's why I'm an anarchist. That's why every single day I talk about what the state is, what a law is, what regulation is, what a tax is, right? So it's not just that I'm for, cannabis legalization, or I'm for, opposing net neutrality or whatever, it's the underlying institution of the state, right? The state, again, going back to the very definition of what the state is, it's just, a monopoly on violence, or a monopoly on coercion. That's it. All they have to, their only arsenal to solve any complex problem is a gun, is a knife, or is jail. Prison.
So here,
only way that they have to solve complex problems.
Right, I can understand, but so in an ideal world, we wouldn't need net neutrality because there'd be a free and open market. But given that there's no free and open market for the internet, isn't net neutrality a good, compromise? Because there's no way we're going to remove all regulation on the internet anytime soon. So given that we have regulation, given that they have these monopolies, isn't net neutrality the best compromise to move us into somewhat of a fair system?
Well, again, I don't think not only will it be ineffective, net neutrality, but it will be counterproductive. If the companies are not completely nationalized, if they're not completely nationalized, then again, they will probably and this has happened in history, the corporations send their own people into the regulatory agencies that are meant to regulate them and have them write their own laws that are meant to regulate themselves. And the only thing that it does is buffer them and protect them. You know, it's basically what a definition of a monopoly is creation of the state. And it will stifle any kind of innovation, any kind of competition, any new startup that can potentially yield a better product at a cheaper price.
That's where I would jump in a little bit, just because I think really that is a supposition that, like, anti-corruption acts are not actively, you know, underway. Because, yeah, I mean, ultimately you're talking about money in politics and people, you know, even, you know, the chairman of the FCC right now is a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
However, if that is to continue, you're right. But the hope, I guess, is right now that if we can somehow maintain some net neutrality, continue our activism, then we can actually have some really tough campaign finance laws that prevent that type of scenario from occurring. Right? So, I mean, doesn't that make sense, though? If, like, I mean, in an ideal world, for me personally, I don't think that the whole dichotomy of having a big government versus a big business to try to regulate business to keep it from becoming monopoly is ever going to be successful. And yeah, in an ideal world, we would love to change that from the very foundation and move it to something like you're talking about. But in the meantime, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. And realistically, we have to do something that works for us that doesn't push us towards a totalitarian state. I'll just add one more thing. I would say an ideal, I think, compromise is, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of microcapitalism, but it's a form of capitalism that basically says, instead of having, you know, here's the dichotomy we have. We have Republicans on one side that are like, okay, big business, let's try to, or libertarians are also on the same side, let's have a free and open market, no regulation, and just let business do its thing and innovate as it should please. And on the other side, Democrats are terrified of what that would mean, because it would pollute the environment, it would have tons of, like, social justice issues pop up, and, you know, you need to have a powerful organization equally as powerful, like the government, to try to regulate that. So now you have our current situation where you have Democrats versus Republicans. Both of them think they're right, and both of them are both wrong and right. And I would say that both of them are too powerful. The government needs to be smaller, and organizations should be smaller. And there should be a cap on how big organizations should get, and the capital should be in as many hands as possible instead of sequestering it to the hands of a few. That's the ideal of a microcapitalist system, is some things are nationalized when they get too powerful, and the rest of things you try to keep unregulated so that businesses can grow, but not to an extent where they become too powerful that it starts to threaten the very system that it exists in. And for me, I would love to push towards that, but I don't think that's realistically going to happen in my lifetime. I think that the best we have at this point is to try to work within the current system and try to minimize the damage of the system that we're currently in. And I think ultimately, if you put the internet, which is one of the most powerful tools that we have, in the hands of the very people who are basically doing the oppressing, you have a recipe for disaster. You have a recipe for totalitarianism. And you have something where the internet can then be censored by business and the government, because they're essentially the same thing at this point. And I don't think that that's safe. I mean, I'm just thinking about the safety of my child. You know, I'm thinking about the safety of all of us. I don't think it's a very safe situation to just turn the keys over to the very people who are potentially threatening the existence of our entire civilization.
I think that the biggest problem that I would see having with the argument about, oh, the net neutrality helps these monopolies, and this is a question, is why aren't we seeing these strict competitions with before we had net neutrality? We still had roughly the same options for ISPs before net neutrality was implemented, and I don't know, was it 2014 or 2015? I think it was 2014, I'm not sure. But we still saw these same companies. It was still practically a monopoly. And it's because of, I think Jim Kim
probably... Someone got, like, something clicking in the background?
Yeah, someone's got a clicking noise in the background.
Oh, sorry, that's my son. He's playing in the playground.
Someone was writing a board.
It sounded like a cash register, like...
Yeah, it sounded like a typewriter. But anyway, so... where was I? I was talking about how we still see these. Yeah. Right. So and how and also how why would these companies be campaigning for the obviously you could see how the end of net neutrality could benefit them from a point of view. The end of net neutrality could. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought there. I'm trying to remember what I was saying before that. I thought I was talking about
The status quo is that they had a lot of power and they why
right. So the thing is, it really hasn't changed, and I don't see in fact I see at the end of the neutrality improving these monopolies' power because the ISPs could potentially restrict access to a website of another ISP that's a startup ISP. And I really don't, and especially I have to agree with what Nick was saying about how wholeheartedly about how while I think what you're saying is it has some idealistic benefits, what we can do within the current system right now is limited, and net neutrality really stops these. Let's be honest here. Let's call it what it is. It's a monopoly. They divvy up territory within them. They divvy up territory. They don't compete because they work together. And this has happened before net neutrality, and will happen after net neutrality, after the 14th, if it gets repealed. This, I really don't see this changing. And I don't think anyone saw a bunch of third-party companies suddenly crash down after net neutrality was implemented. I think things virtually stayed the same within the monopoly point of view.
Good. Should I respond? Can I respond?
Yeah.
All right, go for it.
All right, so I want to respond to... So there's two Neils, right? Neil the kid and then Neil with the baby, right?
No, there's Nick. Yeah, there's Nick. Two Nicks. There's Neil is the young one. Nick has a kid. And then there's also Nick without a kid.
Okay. So Nick with the kid. what was he talking about? All right. So one thing I want to say is that the state is – the way I describe or I think of the state is like a 900-pound gorilla, right? And we like point the gorilla and encourage it, maybe with cattle prongs, say, go this way, right? And then once the gorilla starts moving, that's all we can do. That's it. We have no more influence anymore. We can maybe influence a one direction, but that's it, right? The state, again, is a monopoly, right? We do vote, we vote for our the representatives, the politicians, but after that, so much of what happens in the state is not decided by the citizenry, right? So this is why, to me, another reason why it's so dangerous to entrust the state to do anything, because we essentially do not control what the state does at all, essentially what controls and really decides what politicians do are, again, the huge corporations that have their corporate lobbyists that go in and bribe these politicians to do whatever they want, right? So this is the first thing.
Exactly.
The second thing is that there's this idea that the state is has benevolent and angelic people running the state, right? That if only we enact the right legislation, the right regulation, things will work out, right? When in fact the state, again, is an institution of coercion and is an institution of power. Now, historically, what kind of person is attracted to an institution of power? Is it the most benevolent? Is it the kind-hearted? Is it the compassionate among us? Is that the person that likes to rule over their fellow man with violence and force? No. In my understanding of history, the type of person that's attracted to positions of power are the most sociopathic and the most megalomaniacal and those completely lacking in compassion, right? That is mostly the type of person who is attracted to a position of power. So, again, entrusting that type of person with any kind of power or any kind of legislation, to me, is very, very dangerous. Okay? And then what the kid, Nick? The kid, right? Nick?
Neil,
sorry. What Neil was saying about why there wasn't competition before net neutrality, again, there were very few corporations, and again, they were all monstrously huge, and they all had their own little monopolies where they, you know, where they were functioning, right? Their own little areas of influence. So again, there's a massive amount of regulation already with these cable companies, with these phone companies, these ISPs. And so again, there is no free market, right? There's massive regulatory barriers to any startup, right? So it's not a free market. It's very far from a free market. And so there's a long line of monopolistic institutions, that have occupied this field of internet service providers, and before that, phone service providers, at AT&T being the most monstrous.
So I just want to really quick, Jim, we've had somebody in the comments, and I know we were talking about this earlier, saying that if someone in the comments really wants to join, we can actually have them join. And
yeah, why is there someone in there?
Yeah, Laughlaw Productions actually asked if he can join the stream. So,
I think that's Veronica.
Oh, great. Well,
yeah, let me pipe it. So, Dinala, I very much appreciate your perspective, because like my fantasy land of the world is one where aliens would show up to Earth. No. Listen to me. I'm being really, really practical. So, like, I look at it like I dream of a day when aliens will show up here and they will observe us, and they won't know whether they're observing socialism or anarchy. And that they'll see, like, all these people that are being cooperative and collaborative and sharing and peaceful, and nobody's telling anybody that they have to do it. So I, like, live in this world where, like, I want this, like, peaceful and cooperative thing where everything works together, but I hate the idea of people being fucking forced to do good, and laws are, like, things that are, like, forcing people to do good. And so, like, I look at it like, okay, ultimately, what is the long-term way that you end up with that? Is it that, like, what are the structures, or like, what does it actually look like in practice? And maybe it's a world where there is a government doing like administrative work that's on behalf of the people. Like maybe if things were tipped upside down and like the government actually was working for the people, then that'd be different. Is that realistic or practical? Like, I'm not really sure, but I mean, it sounds like we're like kind of coming at it from these two views that we both see this thing. They're like these opposite philosophies or opposite structures where we want the same thing in the end, and we're trying to figure out, will people do this if they're not forced to, right? And then in the middle of all that, like, long-term utopian, like, dream of, like, this social anarchy kind of blend, we have in 9 days people are voting as to whether they can adjust the internet in a way to slow down speeds and connections that could potentially silence voices that could – it could be silencing a movement towards – anarchism. It could be silencing a movement towards socialism. And like, that's like this practical thing that has to happen in 9 days with this vote. So like, I kind of live in this world of not knowing like how to act. Like, do I devote my energy to, you know, like where does one like put their energy in their kind of fight in this? So like, I definitely appreciate the perspective that you have on this. And I'm glad that you're here giving that.
I'd like to add just one more thing, just because I'm going to be losing a battery here in a second, so I'll probably have to log off. But I just wanted to say that, and just response real quick, the idea that I think there was a lot of suppositions that were made in your statement, Dylan, and for the most part, I understand what you're saying, that power hungry people seek out power. That is without question. I think that you can't really argue against that. But I would say that it's not necessarily power that a lot of people enter politics that are after when they're getting involved in politics. For example, myself, I don't consider myself to be a power hungry person. I'm definitely very cause motivated. And I know that there's a lot of other people out there like me who are getting involved in politics right now because they're really frustrated the way things are and they want things to be for the better. So to kind of suppose that the entire system is corrupted to the core, where people are so power hungry that it will never work, I think is a little bit of an overstatement, an oversimplification of the current system. And I think that there is a way that, at least in the meantime, before, again, like, we get to what Jim's talking about, maybe some sort of utopian type of a future, which I would hope would be right around the corner. That would be amazing. Are you kidding me? I would love that. But currently, we have the current system. And I think we have to be responsible in the current system, currently, making wise decisions while we have the system we have. And I would say, in the long run, in, like, the not too long run, like the short term, like the next 5 or 10 years, I think the most single important issue is campaign finance reform and getting it so that, you know, politicians can't essentially be bought. I mean, I really suggest you check out the Represent Us national website and just check into the Anti-Corruption Act a little bit so you can kind of get an idea of what the legislation is going to be covering. And it is going to happen. I have no doubt that this Anti-Corruption Act is going to eventually pass. It's just going to take some time and some patience. And in the meantime, we need the internet to stay free and open. We really need it, because if this doesn't stay free and open, that might be the only thing that can possibly jeopardize the movement that is to try to slow the the progress towards oligarchic form of totalitarianism, which is exactly where we're headed right now. And it's terrifying. I mean, we all know what totalitarian states can do. It's really, really terrifying to think that that would be the possible scenario that we're headed towards. But it definitely seems like that's the writing that's on the wall. And, you know, me and you could, like, agree or disagree towards, like, what type of utopian society might be really great. But in the meantime, we need to make, like Jim was saying, some really practical decisions on net neutrality. So that way we have a platform that we can stand on. I don't know if that makes any sense, but anyway, I got like 7% left, and I think I'll probably drop out before I respond again. So it was a pleasure to be with all you guys, and thank you for inviting me to be on here. I'll watch as long as I have power, and then when I drop out, just know that my heart goes with all of you.
We have a new guest here, so please go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Veronica. I work for Jim. I think net neutrality is a good thing because I just don't understand why would anyone want to slow somebody else's site down. That just makes no sense to me.
Well, I mean, come on. If you wanted to, like, if I'm an internet service provider and I also own a media company, so let's say I own your internet connection and I own a newspaper, and I want you to go to my newspaper's website and read my news and not the other guys, then I would slow down their websites and not my website.
But that's cheating.
You're fucking right, it's cheating. That's what it's all about. I mean,
yeah, damn right. But actually,
yeah,
you have to do it fair and square.
In response, actually, to, sorry, Danilo, is that how I say it?
Yep,
I think
that's good.
So, Danilo, I appreciate the response to my comments, but I guess I still don't really see how net neutrality would help prevent against. Cause basically, my stance is with these monopolies in place, there's really revoking net neutrality would really do nothing but just give these monopolies more power. Because most people say subject it to the free market, but the problem is there is no free market to subject. There's no said free market to subject this to. Because of the fact that they have a monopoly. I was talking earlier on the stream about how these ISPs, they have basically, I said this many times earlier, so, so how many ISPs, you know, do normally people have in your area? The answer for most is one, maybe two, and those ISPs most likely are these huge companies that all are in favor of gutting net neutrality rules and are all for PI's plan. I still don't see how gutting net neutrality is going to stop monopolies, considering that right now most people's only access through said monopolies. We are going to have to even access another ISP, we're gonna have to go through said monopoly without net neutrality, which is an obstacle in its own. The ISP can block the competition, which is why NetTalk is created in the first place, I believe.
So, great question. So when I say free market, right, I automatically mean the absence of the state, right? Or like a market where the state has not infiltrated at all, like let's say pretty much the electronics industry, you know? So that's what I mean when I say free market. So when you say, if we remove net neutrality and these companies have the power to do whatever they want in the free market, no, it's not a free market, again, because they still have their political connections. They still have their influence. They still are able to bribe and buy politicians, right? This is at essence why I not only am opposed to net neutrality, but why I advocate for voluntarism, for free markets, for anarchism, for individuals to empower themselves to live their lives as if the state does not exist, right? Because basically, let me just describe again a different way about the state. You know, how many people are involved in the state? You know, let's say a couple of hundred politicians. You know, let's say, I don't know, a couple of thousand of senators, House of Representatives, things like that. So very small amount of people. And then you have maybe like a million law enforcement officers that are basically the force and the violence behind the state's laws and regulations. Okay? So there's, 312 million people in the United States right now, right? Now, we say that this huge government is oppressing us, right? We don't want the government to get too huge because if it does, it's going to oppress us. Again, couple of hundred politicians, couple of thousand senators, representatives, maybe a million officers and soldiers too, right? Now, is it possible for a million officers to oppress 312 million people? I don't think so. I don't think that's possible at all. Now, hold on. The only way that that's possible is if the people believe that the state is legitimate. If they don't believe that the state is an agency of violence, is an agency of force that only exists through, through threats of coercion. That's the only reason. That's the only arsenal it has, and the only way that it has all this power. You know, we say Obama has all this power, Trump has all this power. The only way that these politicians have all their power is because the vast majority of people believe they are legitimate rulers. Now, I live my life as if the state does not exist. Okay? Now, that's not to say... Now, listen. That's not to say that I'm an immoral person. I have a moral compass. I have a conscience. I understand what morality is. That's all I talk about on my podcast, is morality, economics, and philosophy. I teach that to my kids. Every person that I interact with, I teach them. That's what you should obey. You should obey your own moral compass, your own conscience, not a law, not a regulation, right? Murder is bad because you're violating the self-ownership of another person, not because it's illegal, right? Things must be universal, right? If theft is wrong for me, if I point a gun at somebody and rob them, that's theft, that's wrong, I go to jail. If a politician robs me via taxation, if I don't pay, I go to jail. It's called taxation, and it's legitimate, right? So it's not, these concepts are not universal. When the state does a, you know, if an individual,
yeah, Nick's phone died.
If an individual does what the state representatives or what the state agents of the state do, what the law enforcement officers do, they would be committing a crime, and they would go to jail. Right. If you follow somebody in the road and you force them to pull over because they don't have a seatbelt on.
Yeah, but what if you're really cute?
You're assaulting them. so basically, this is what I'm talking about. This is why the way I look at it, the state has no power without the people actually believing they have power. Right. Because the people are so outnumbering and outclassing and so much stronger than the state. The state is basically like a parasite. It's a parasite on the neck of the industrious, of the productive people, right? All the state does is siphon away productivity from those people that are actually producing the wealth and that are doing the work.
Yeah, so I think we get it. What you're trying to make clear is that the number one thing that we could do is abolish regulation. That's the absolute best solution. But given that that's not happening overnight, is a good second best situation to maintain net neutrality?
No. Because I would not support, again, well,
okay, so you've already said that.
So, hold on. So there are some anarchists that say, you know, if the politician says, I'll tax you at 50%, and then another politician says, I'll tax you at 45%, isn't it a good thing, even though we're anarchists, isn't it a good thing that we advocate for the politician that taxes us at 45%, right? They're stealing from us less. And on the surface, it seems that, yes, that's a good thing. But, again, the way I look at it, any attention, any participation in the political process legitimizes the violence of the state.
So let me get on this one. So if I am getting a better understanding, Danilo, then what you're saying is that it's not so much that you are for or against net neutrality, given that you yourself don't have the voting power for it. It's like you're against the idea of bothering with getting involved in it because it's the activities of the state, and that's not a role for you to play in getting involved in that. And maybe in the short term, there are some penalties that go along with us losing net neutrality. Maybe there are not, but if our fears are short-sighted about the near term of, oh, we'll lose innovation, like we'll lose internet access, we'll lose the ability to organize and have activism, like it's possible that those things in the short run would happen. But if we had a long-term goal towards organism, anarchy, that in the long term, humans would innovate and be human ingenuity would overcome those issues in the long term. And yes, we might be upset and we might cry and we might be frustrated that we can't organize for a little while and that we're frustrated that we can't connect online and come together. And it would suck. Maybe like, this sucks. But if we actually had our eyes on the long-term prize of reaching some sort of anarchistic society, humans would innovate and be overcoming those things. And in time, maybe there would be a hit that we take. In time, we would be moving towards a positive goal. Whereas if we waste our time peddling our feet, going back and forth every 2 years about net neutrality and this issue and that issue, we're constantly being complicit in a system that will never be escaped from. It will only be kind of shifted around and moved back and forth. Whereas at least under your terms, there may be a short-term frustration. It doesn't mean that we're going to be like fire in the streets and burning down City Hall, but it's an appropriate long-term measure to take. And so that's kind of...
Yeah, I think that's a fair synopsis.
So I guess I would have to. I think I found some. I think I do. I've done some research on anarchy, and I think it's quite fascinating, and definitely has some very very valid arguments, and I think it's quite interesting. However, the reason I'm sitting here is because I am participating in the state. In fact, Brian, the staff member at my school, Jim, you met him, of course, and he actually doesn't vote for the same reason that
he's
don't want.
He
doesn't want the government to. He's an anarchist, I believe. He doesn't want the government to get involved in any of this. And I suppose I definitely do understand the point of view, but from where I'm sitting and from what I see happening, I guess I see I weigh the pros and cons in my head. And I see here's how much it'll take to get to anarchy. Here's what it will offer. Here's how much we are here. What can we do realistically? What's realistically going to help out? What realistically is going to be opposed to that? And what realistically can we do now to improve the best method of communication that we have and the best method of organization that we have? But I think that actually we only have around, 3 minutes left of this podcast, and it's been a really cool ride. So does our new guest, do you want to say anything or bring any topics up?
I don't mind going over a little bit.
We give us 3 minutes of gold now.
No, we started about 20 minutes late, right? We were going to do a 12-hour run, and I think we started like 20 minutes late. So if we go over a little bit, like, I don't mind.
Yeah, we can go over a little bit.
Wait, were you talking about me being here 2 hours ago?
No. I mean in the morning.
Jim and I started the stream. Jim and I started the stream 11 hours and 28 minutes ago.
Yeah,
so we started a half hour late. Yeah, actually, let me run and use the bathroom real quick. Sorry to leave as Veronica's about to. No, I can hold it for longer. No, I'm not gonna be a dick. No, she comes in. How do you identify your? It's like, oh, Veronica, identify yourself. She's like, oh, I work for GEM. And I'm like, okay. Like, there's more to you than the fact that you do some web development work.
Okay, and then she goes into more stuff further. So I don't have a bathroom.
No, I'll hold it a little longer. I've only peed, once during this entire thing.
Wow.
Wow, that's an accomplishment.
That's a long time.
You guys are dedicated.
So have I, actually. I mean, I've been doing breaks because I have to go to other places, but I think that I have as well.
Bell out. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I'm a person of a few words. I really don't want any websites to go real slow. I don't want I'm going to the protest in Palo Alto. I'm in California. Like, Palo Alto isn't that big of a city, or is it? I don't know. And in the Verizon protest thing, I don't know. I've never been to a protest. I think it would be fun. And I just don't like. Wait, but there's like these two things. So Verizon's like really big, and then the government is even bigger. So there's these really two big things that are controlling the internet. And so Verizon is controlling the small websites, or whatever. I try to look this stuff up beforehand, but just scrolling through a Wikipedia page. and then so the government is trying to restrict the big companies like Verizon from doing that. And I just wish that they both would stop, I guess.
Yeah, it's DeMille's philosophy, you know?
I wanted to talk a little bit about the economics of the whole idea of, you know, controlling the internet, and like apart from the government, right? What is the economics behind that? Like, what does that mean to control the internet, right? And I wanted to. I think that would clear up a lot of confusion, because it seems to be a complex topic, but I don't think it needs to be, right? So, you know, a lot of people ascribe the internet to be something special, and it is special. But and vital and important, you know, access to all this information, great stuff. However, you know, we need a lot of other things. We need food. We need water. You know, we need education. We need friends. And to say that something is more important than something else is, to me, an inaccuracy, right? So just like, you know, we have farmers, we have, you know, people making cars, we have people fixing cars, people making houses. These are all services, right, that people provide for a price, right? And you can pay a small price and get a lower quality service, or you can pay a higher price and get a higher quality service. Now, the same thing with these companies. Now, I understand that they have enormous government influence throughout the decades, even before the internet, and that they have laid the foundation for broadband and for transmission of this data. And so it's kind of very difficult to divorce these companies from the state. But, you know, just think about this, that all they are providing is a service, just like a farmer, just like somebody who builds houses, just like somebody who makes cars. All they're providing is a service. They are bringing information to you, right? And what I'm saying is that is no different. Right, and what the price mechanism does, which is a beautiful thing, is it provides feedback from consumer to producer. Right, it tells the producer what the consumer wants, what they're willing to pay for, what they're willing to buy. Right, and it gives feedback to the producer and telling them what they should produce, what they should focus on, what they should focus their resources on making available. Right? And the very same thing. So, you know, when you go on a plane, you know, there's the economy class and then there's first class, right? Much big difference in price, big difference in quality and comfort and service and so many things, right? Now, people take first class because it's valuable to them, because they want to, right? And to me, the very same reason, you know, if we imagine that there will be fast lanes and there will be slow lanes, even, let's say, on a highway, right? Again, it's difficult to draw an analogy because roads are government controlled. But if we imagine, you know, information traveling along a network, it's not an infinite resource. It's a scarce resource, right? We cannot all do the very same thing on the internet.
What's up, Brian?
You know, we cannot all go to the very same. Wait, hold on. Let me just finish. So we cannot all go to the very same website. It will probably crash. We cannot all watch the very same video on YouTube. It will probably crash, right? So there is a certain amount of data, of information that's able to be transmitted. Now, with net neutrality, if we were to say that no discrimination can be made, that all information is the same, that, you know, they can't charge different prices to different people, what we're essentially saying is that everybody will be slowed down. Everybody will be on the slow lane. Now, what I'm saying is that when companies are able to freely distribute their services, when companies are freely able to distribute their services, right, you will have a very broad spectrum of prices, right? Because the guy who likes to watch cat videos in his basement has a different demand for data than the guy, you know, the executive of a large company, or I don't know, people who like to watch high definition videos, right? They have different demands. And again, so why would you not want to provide different price structures, just like any other service, just like buying a car? We buy different tiers of prices, just like boarding a plane, just like food. You know, you get poor quality food, you get expensive food, right? So when companies are allowed to freely innovate and function as they should, what we get is not only a divergence and a large spectrum of prices, but we get more competition, which leads to increased quality and decrease price overall. Think about the electronics industry. Increased quality and innovation and a decrease in prices. So I think the economics of the situation is also helpful to understand.
So I think that if I could respond, I think that I had the
joke. Now you messed it up.
Tell the joke.
Okay, so you said something about the highway, right? So I wanted to add something to that. So your thought about the highway, right? Okay, so all the websites are cars, and some are, you know, they have a lot going on their website, and so they're in the slow lane, and then there's some that are very simple websites that are in the hot, and in the left lane, and then the fast lane. And then, so what you're saying is that people like cars like Verizon can go in the left lane and go really slow in the left lane, so that the fast websites cars can they have to slow down because there's this obstacle, and they can't go past them because there are other cars next to them and creates a traffic jam.
Wait, was that a question or an observation?
It was an observation.
Okay.
Well, like, there's like this piece here. So, like, okay.
Jim, I actually have to get going, but
okay.
I thank you guys. I learned a lot about something that I wasn't very familiar with before.
Cool, man. And thanks for joining in, Nick. It was awesome having you on, dude.
Yeah, thank you very much, and it was a pleasure meeting all you guys.
You wasn't doing it.
You're doing it. I'll commit a few more hours.
All right, cool. Awesome.
All right, guys. Thank you. It was nice meeting you.
All right.
Nice
meeting you. Thanks.
Bye, Nick.
I mean, there's a certain sentiment that you're getting at that is that if, let's say it's the internet, that if all of a sudden the internet gets fucked up, okay, and all the people that, you know, have been talking about, like whether you're an activist or a small business owner, whatever your interest in using the internet on kind of an equal level playing field, if those opportunities disappear, so like if people like Nick, who was on here earlier, aren't able to use the internet for organizing and activism, and like the online communities that I've mentioned earlier, whether it's the Unschooling Network or whether it's the New Light Beings one, that if these things were to be taken away because the powers that be wanted them to not exist anymore, And in many ways, they would, whether you're a pharma company not wanting a bunch of people to be getting together discussing alternative mental health, or whether you're the school system not wanting a bunch of people doing unschooling. There are some powerful entities that would not want these people organizing in the way that they've had, right? So if it is true that net neutrality was removed or becomes removed, and if it is true that the powers that be silence these voices and these different methods, we're sitting here saying, oh no, fuck, what are we going to do? They're going to destroy the internet. They're going to ruin it. It's going to change everything. And what you're saying is, yes, that's possible, but it is in human nature and it is the way that humans are. We're creative, we're innovative. If there is a problem, we will come up with solutions to invent around this problem. So if it's true, like, we haven't been presented yet with the world where the internet is totally fucked. But if it was, then you'd have a bunch of nerds and engineers. Like, you'd have people like me and Veronica and Adam, who's Adam's an engineer too. You'd have us being like, okay, we got this problem. What can we do to come up with a solution? And all these nerds in the world have been putting our brain power together to try to solve that problem. And right now, we're not really doing that because we're not forced to. Right now, we don't all have to bring our brain power together to come solve this problem. But if the internet did get fucked, then we would have to come and solve this problem, and we'd all come together. And I guess, like, on behalf of all the nerds, it's like, I don't want to have to, like, go reinvent the fucking internet, you know, just because some other people fucked it up. You know, I guess, like, that's kind of it. Like, I get it that we'd figure out another way. We'd find some kind of peer-to-peer system where instead of using the main lines, now that everyone's got Wi-Fi devices, we'd find ways to reprogram our Wi-Fi receptors. There's our HoloChain is coming out, like, doing some kind of peer-to-peer network so we don't rely on ISPs. So, like, maybe it is possible that there are people already innovating in this way to avoid the need for ISPs. That there is a way that I've seen people talking about with HoloChain and some other technologies of, like, the point where you may not end up needing them, and that maybe it is already happening that we're evolving away from it and we're, like, treating a doomsday scenario because we don't have the new invention yet to replace the traditional internet. So, I guess it is possible that that's true. You know, it's frustrating maybe for the engineers of the world to be like, fuck, will you guys just, like, use the shit that we've got properly so we don't have to keep coming up with a new cool technology? It's like light bulbs. You know, I was in the LED lighting space. You come out with these, like, whoop-de-doo new LEDs. You put them in. They're supposed to reduce energy consumption, you know, 80% on your lighting bill and, like, save everyone energy. And you plug them in, and then you get a customer who you just relit his building with energy-saving devices. And then they go, oh, I love it. Like, you relit my building. It's great. And now I just leave the lights on all the time. And you're like, what? And you're like, well, my energy bill went down a bunch, so I just leave the lights on all the time. And you're like, you cocksucker. Like, dude, there were people that spent a lot of time doing scientific research figuring out how an LED even works and how it could produce light. And then there's engineers figuring out, like, how can we take this scientific discovery and figure out how we can make a device that's going to emit light, focus it, and then build a packaging a proper device that actually fits into a house. And then you've got some laborers in China, which part of the reason for the drive down in costs in electronics is also a lot of cheap labor that's putting this shit together overseas. We can't, like, deny that aspect of the free market. We have, like, all these laborers in China putting these light bulbs together, and boom, then you put it on a ship, you ship it over the Pacific to the United States, and then all of a sudden, like, the United States Postal Service, which we talk about how much they suck, they're selling and moving these products all around the country, and people install them, and all these people think that they're, like, saving the world and reducing energy consumption. And then the public are just like, oh, great, I'll just leave the light on all the time. And they're like, fuck it. So, like, sometimes I think, like, maybe, like, the engineers in the world are, like, maybe tired of having to, like, solve all the fucking problems that the public are creating in some way. And that other people, like, I don't know, I mean, maybe, like, there's, like, a little bit of, like, a revolt of, like, we got something that works and other people are fucking it up, so now we gotta all come together and we gotta fix it.
I wanted to respond to what Danilo said about well, why not just isn't it free to have people that are using different the internet for different services pay more or pay less? And I agree, but not in the way where revoking net neutrality and having you pick and choose what websites you want, because again, that can restrict third-party websites. So what I think what would work is, Jim and I were talking about this a lot earlier on stream, well, not a lot, maybe 2 hours ago or so, I don't remember, but we were talking about how we were actually reading an anti-net neutrality article, and we were thinking about, well, why wouldn't you just pay for the amount of bandwidth that you're using? Rather than which you do, rather than, you know, the specific websites you're going to. So, and because that would work in a lot more fair way. So, for example, instead of having to, you get the Netflix package, you get the TV package, you get Netflix, you get Hulu, you get da 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 da. You could actually, for example, if someone watched Netflix, if person A watched Netflix this much, or person B watched Netflix this much, they would pay different amounts. Other than they bought the Netflix package, now they have to pay a flat rate. They would pay based on how much they use the internet. And I think that's an even more fair system. But yeah.
The thing with net neutrality, the way I look at it, is that even if it does go through, I don't think it will work. Meaning, people love the internet because it's unregulated.
Wait, just to be clear, are you saying if the repeal goes through or if net neutrality?
Sorry. If net neutrality goes through, implemented, net neutrality.
So if net neutrality is maintained, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Maintained. Right. Okay. Right. If it clamps down, if they increase regulations, if they force the ISPs to across the board only give one speed and one price and all that. I honestly don't think it will succeed, because I think, like Jim says, what if the internet gets messed up? What are we going to do then? And honestly, I don't think it will. I think the internet is so vast. I think it is so distributed. I think the reason that people love the internet is because it's unregulated, right? Because you can make any website, and not only on the regular internet, but on the dark net, you can make any website, right? That's why people love it, right? So if all of a sudden the state would impose more restrictions, more regulations on what people can do online, I think there will be a massive surge in programmers and people who are tech savvy to try to find ways around it. That is just human nature. Human nature, the way I see it, shuns control, right? And that is essentially what the internet is trying to do. What the state is trying to do is control, and suppress. Because that when the state regulates something, that's in essence equivalent to it controlling it, right? Just shy of nationalizing it, all right? Right, regulation and taxation is control, right? So I honestly don't think it would work, because there are so many people that even if they don't call themselves anarchists, they are acting as anarchists, because people love innovation, they love diversity in products, in a marketplace. People love electronics because we have such a diverse array of them. People love. Computers, because they're such a diverse, and there's the innovation is happening every day. You can't even keep up with it. It's happening so fast, right? And so that's why I think it's going to, even if it succeeds, it's going to fail.
Okay, so I think I see what you're saying. You're saying that more regulation is bad by the government, right? If the government regulates the internet, that's going to be a decrease in the quality of the internet. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
But isn't a repeal of net neutrality opening the door to regulation by internet service providers? Because now they are free to choose what content they put out or what gets distributed.
Again, it's not just that I'm opposed to net neutrality, but it's also that I'm an anarchist, right?
I think we get that point.
Yeah, yeah. So I think what you're talking about is you're talking about a pragmatic approach, right?
Yes. As
long as we have the state, as long as we have the companies as they are, let's use the state to our advantage. And basically what I'm saying is, again, the state is a 900-pound gorilla. You can push it in a direction. After that, you have absolutely no control. You can whip the people up and get them in nationalistic fervor to go invade a country. And then after they invade, you have absolutely no control of what they do there. Absolutely no control. You can elect a politician, he gets into office, and then you have absolutely no control what he does after that. For 4 years, maybe you can kick him out in four more years, you have absolutely no control of what he does in office.
I'll be off real quick.
So that's what I'm saying, is that we can't control what the state does. Again, it's a 900-pound gorilla, we have no control over what it does, and most of the time, it's a bull in a china shop, just wreaking havoc and destruction.
And I think I just want to... really quick, and I definitely do agree with your point there about how people are smart programmers. They can find ways. They can, if they work hard enough, if people get together, we can work ways around this. But the thing is, I guess my point really is, they shouldn't have to. I don't really think they should have to do this. I think that they should, you know, be able to access it as it is now. And I just wanted to really quick make a statement about the stream. No matter what everyone's viewpoint is, I just want to say that, I mean, I just want to say we've done an incredible job. In around 11 minutes, we will have reached the 12-hour mark.
And we go around and do closing remarks then?
So we'll
we'll hit at that closing mark then.
All right, so who wants to begin?
Not it. Or maybe it.
Everyone wants the last. Everyone wants the last word, right?
What is the basic essence of what we've talked about here? That that net neutrality. That a lot of people think that net neutrality is a good thing, but then also we don't really we feel like, oh, if the government controls who can do what with the internet, then it's bad. And oh, the people who use the internet less anyway, maybe if the big people control it, and so they'll stop controlling it because they'll see that it's bad to control. I don't know.
Okay. Cool, Danilo.
So I just want to thank you for inviting me on this live stream. This was a last minute thing, but I'm really glad to have taken part in it. So I think, you know, this is one of many topics that needs to be talked about, you know, and discussions like this are absolutely essential and wonderful, because if we don't have educated and intellectual discussions with words, what we do have is violence with sticks and stones and bats. And you want to first begin with the words and talk to people and try to persuade them with your arguments and with your logic, right? So that's
go from there.
Go from there, yeah. So that's the thing. So yeah. Again, I mean, net neutrality to me is the you know, first thing in a larger problem of what I call statism, or the belief in authority, or the belief in the state. And I don't believe, as a principled anarchist and voluntarist, that anything the state does can yield a beneficial or positive outcome. And there's this idea of, you know, like Jim was saying before, you know, there's a problem in the world, I don't like the government, but we need the government to solve this problem. like you're going back and forth. But there's this idea of legislating morality, right? And that's what a lot of politicians try to do. You know, they say, you know, drugs are bad, so we should pass a law to force everyone to not do drugs. And what ends up happening? More people die from the law enforcers who are enforcing these laws than they actually die from the drugs, right? So this is why I'm saying that there is, in my mind, no positive outcome that can come from a state action, regardless of what it is, net neutrality being the least among those. I'm sure a lot more people have suffered under the war on drugs than have suffered from, you know, regulatory imposition by the state on these ISPs, you know, with slow loading of your YouTube videos, you know, watching, I don't know, beautiful podcast. So this is what I'm saying. I prioritize certain things, but yeah, so that's what I'm saying. My stance is firmly principled anarchist voluntarist, opposing anything the state does.
Adam, you want to do a closing remark?
Yeah. Firstly, I'd like to thank Danilo for joining us, because it was definitely, we needed someone to give that opposite point of view.
Yes, I'm very glad about that.
Yeah, I totally respect where you're coming from. I apologize that it's kind of a 5 or 6 on 1. At
no, it's all right.
I respect that a lot. This may open up a huge can of worms. I know we're just visiting, so I apologize, but I think I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum as Danilo. Although that, you know, the state has its faults, I believe it's the, you actually pay to live in a society. I believe that's the government, you know, it creates the conditions that make it possible for a free market to exist. It decides what is considered property. It wasn't so long ago that we considered people could be property. Can a person control intellectual property? Can I control a video I create or, you know, Apple's rounded phones? Who protects their trademarks so that they don't get completely copied? Who decides if Monsanto can copyright an organism? Secondly, decides what can be agreed upon in a contract. How can businesses deal with each other if they can't be sure that their contracts will be enforced? Thirdly, do governments break up monopolies? To what extent do they allow monopolies to exist? Four, bankruptcy protections. What happens when someone can't pay their debts? What happens if they have to go bankrupt? And finally, fifth, you know, the enforcement of these rules. You know, in what way can you give a teeth to enforce it? I understand that that can go horribly awry, as we've seen, but I believe that there exists a balance where both sides of the spectrum can lead to big problems.
Sure. All right. I'm next in the clockwise row. So I really love having both Adam and Danilo's kind of perspective that comes into this. And I thank everyone that throughout the day that was on this. So this is like, we're just about to 12.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.